From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Arthur Brooks is in studio. He's going to be here shortly. It's always great to have him in. He's got the political background, although now he's talking more big picture about happiness. Maybe you could have both. You could be all for politics and happy. He has a great best-selling book out. You know, the last one he wrote with Oprah Winfrey. I think that's how you say her last name. It's called Build a Life That You Want, The Art and Sciences of Getting Happier. I'll teach a course in an Ivy League school on that. And also, it's one of these times where things are breaking nonstop. For example, Hamas says we have not broken off talks about a ceasefire. Interesting for them to say that, number one. Number two, NBC carrying earlier the news, something I've been saying all along, maybe you are too, Michelle Obama making it clear she will not run for president of the United States, which is kind of good. After all, I thought they were friends with the Biden family. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Issue number one, two, and three is absolutely the border. Folks were telling me, you know, they're tired. We're exhausted. We're done with all of the chaos. We're done with Biden not doing anything.
There we go. Congressman Tony Gonzalez, a guy who talks common sense on the border. Two legal setbacks for the broken border bills that are hurting the ability for Texas and now Arizona to control the hemorrhaging of illegals that are hurting all of us. Why we are now perhaps have to wait for the Supreme Court or the next election to get sanity and security.
Number two.
I am working with a number of my colleagues to revive legislation that we had to set up a process by which we could determine that someone who committed insurrection is disqualified by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment.
He should be ashamed of himself. I'll pull back the soundbite when I just asked former President Trump that question about his reaction to Jamie Raskin. Trump trials deliver a win for President Trump, yet the same cast of characters are going to come back and trying to ban him again from state ballots instead of just trying to beat him at an election. Has anyone thought about trying to do that?
Number one.
I won in South Carolina against her. So look, there's no path for Nikki. I wish Nikki the best. But she stood up and many, many times said, I'd never run against our president. You know, those things you don't like to see.
We lost in 2018. We lost in 2020. We lost in 2022. We can want to change the country all day long. But if we can't win an election, we can't do any of that.
Well, that is Nikki Haley about 20 minutes ago on Fox and Friends. Super Tuesday is here. Trump and Haley square off perhaps for the final time. Multiple states, 15 in all, will both say about each other, Biden, Joe Biden, and the chance they will once again come together. And by the way, if you ever miss the show, you can go on a Fox News app, click on watch, and you can actually see the stream of the show. Well, BrianKilmeadeShow.com, and hopefully you're in our growing family of affiliates. So let's talk about what just took place. Nikki Haley was just on Fox and Friends saying she's not going anywhere. And in a way, I understand it. It makes sense because, you know, you fight all this time. I think she's a really good candidate. You're never going to get me to put her down. I don't know about her tactics going full Democratic talking points, but I think she's extremely smart. She's experienced. She's very confident, very bright, accounting on top of an international experience and running a state certainly doesn't hurt. And a family person whose husband's in the military. And she's very comfortable on her feet. I'm not going to put her down. But I understand the feeling is, hey, I'm about to go head-to-head with the former president for 15 states. Can I finish the job first? But you do wonder about a reconciliation and how you can go back on some of the things that you said. Here is Nikki Haley, cut three.
Tomorrow, you got a job to do. I need you to vote, and I need you to take 10 people with you. I need you to text, email, and let all of your friends know that the primary is tomorrow. And I want you to give them a message because you'd be shocked at how many of your family and friends are general election voters. You tell them that in a general election, we're given a choice. In a primary, we make our choice.
So right now it is 273 to 43. This is what I understand. So Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican, in Alaska. I think she's still a Republican. In Alaska, she endorsed Nikki Haley. And then you have the Senator Collins from Maine. Now, both those states, if you don't get over 50%, they'll break up the delegate. So she'll have a chance to walk away with some of them there. She'll have a chance to walk away with some in Maine from these two endorsements alone. And, of course, there's a place in Minnesota where I think she'll be successful. But the winner take all, it's not going to be good for her. And their word is last night, Bret Baier was trying to follow up on this, that she was pulling back some of the money from future states because delegate-wise, Trump will be about a week short or a contest short of winning it all. So in terms of being running mate before, I thought there was a chance. Now I think there's zero chance just because of what they said about each other. Remember voodoo economics? When George H.W. Bush said Ronald Reagan had voodoo economics, doesn't like her economic principles. That was tough to shake. They used that against him, let alone some of the things he's done already. So we'll see on the Democratic side. One thing I did ask President Trump, that when it comes to the people non-commit, when it comes to Biden, they're not going to like you either because you're even more pro-Israel. And you said you have to finish the job. So that's what Biden has going against him. He's bailing on Israel, and because Israel is going hard in Gaza, and I think they have to, the way they're doing it, dropping flyers, text messages, phone calls, trying to get innocents out of the way, not always successful. Trump wants him to finish the job. Biden is worried about Michigan. And now they both are, everybody's both talking about age. One of them, or for example, President Trump yesterday or on Saturday said Obama instead of Biden. Well, Donald Trump's losing it. I don't think so. Speaking for an hour and a half, that one switch, Joe Biden reading off cards says we're dropping humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Reading off cards. So that's a huge difference. Here's Hillary Clinton, cut 10.
This is not someone who we want to give power to again. So I think that's what this election's really going to be about. And, you know, somebody the other day said to me, Zerlina, well, but, you know, Joe Biden's old. I said, you know what? Joe Biden is old. Let's go ahead and accept the reality. Joe Biden is old. So we have a contest between one candidate who's old, but who's done an effective job and doesn't threaten our democracy. And we have another candidate who is old, barely makes sense when he talks, is dangerous, and threatens our democracy.
Well, listen, that's a spin. She's going to roll out Hillary Clinton to help out. They're going to roll out Nancy Pelosi to help out. That's not going to win over one moderate or one independent. They're as polarizing as anybody out there. So you could say, yeah, he's old, but he can do the job. He's old, and nobody thinks he can do the job. He has the lowest approval rating of any president, including Donald Trump, rolling out right now. I mean, some of the things that have come out are unbelievable. I mean, within the stats. So Wall Street Journal comes out as Trump up by 2. The Fox News has Trump up by 2. The New York Times, Siena poll has Trump up by 4. And then you have the CBS poll has Trump up by 4. Now, among voters who have seen Joe Biden for the last 3+ years, 18% of his voters say that Biden's policies have personally helped them. Do you know what that means? The rest believe he's hurt them. So, yeah, he's old. He could do the job. Yeah, he could do it terribly. Domestically, he wants to blame. Domestically, he wants to blame supermarket store owners for high prices. Domestically, he wants to blame oil producers for oil and gas prices that are high. And then, of course, overseas, we see what his decisions have brought. All right, so when we come back, Bret Baier will be joining us, and then we're going to have Arthur Brooks come on. And it's always a pleasure to have both those guys on. We'll put in perspective not only Super Tuesday, some of the other challenges in 2024 in general. It's an exciting time. So glad you're here.
The Brian Kilmeade Show is here for Super Tuesday.
Get everyone you know to the poll so we can trounce Haley.
How many more times do we have to lose before we realize maybe Donald Trump is the problem?
Instant analysis, the latest polls.
We're going to come out so good. I'm more popular than I ever was.
Well, first, let's see what happens on Super Tuesday.
On the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I don't know why everybody's so adamant that they have to follow Trump's lead to get me out of this race. You know, all of these people deserve to vote. 16 states want to have their voices heard. Let's let their voices get heard. I haven't heard him pledge to me that he would support me if I won. So I don't know why I have to go and pledge to him.
That was Nikki Haley about a half hour ago on Fox and Friends. Brett Baer is here live, chief political anchor for Fox, doing our coverage tonight with Martha and everybody else as we see Super Tuesday. 15 states. It is going to be a late night, Brett Baer. That's the first thing you said to me, but I'm trying to tell you that they just started.
It just started. So take a deep breath.
Will you change outfits? Will you have a change of costumes?
I may go with a different red and blue tie.
So far, I would say that outside maybe Alaska and Maine going partially towards Nikki Haley. Have you heard of any other state where she's making inroads? Some people said maybe Virginia.
Vermont, Virginia. Those are open primaries where independents and Democrats can vote. The percentage, there's some of the polls are not that great in some of these states, but the percentages maybe get up to her New Hampshire or Iowa,
right,
or New Hampshire. I mean, 35-40%, and significant in you could pick up some delegates. But as far as a win tonight, unless America Samoa comes in the end, you just can't see it going in.
I broke in that bureau. So I have a lot of friends there.
Started there?
Right. And after work, I'd go right and do rugby, which is really
it's big
weird.
There. It's really big.
Absolutely. I have some video. Do you want to, should I roll it? Oh, it's radio. I forgot. So yesterday, the president got a win on a Trump trial. Like, as expected, the Supreme Court said it's not okay for a state to knock any candidate off for something they haven't been charged or convicted of. It didn't stop Jamie Raskin for saying this. Cut 18.
I am working with a number of my colleagues, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Eric Swalwell, to revive legislation that we had to set up a process by which we could determine that someone who committed insurrection is disqualified by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment.
I mean, listen.
Is this unbelievable?
It really is. It really is. The special counsel who is appointed to look at this case and to bring charges has not charged the former president with insurrection or conspiracy for insurrection, seditious conspiracy. He's not charged with that. He's not convicted of this. Obviously, the trial hasn't gone forward. And yet, this is the way that they feel like they need to get him off the ballot. Listen, the 9-0 was significant. It was a lot of people reading through the opinions and the concurring opinion and saying there must have been some really internal battles going on. But the bottom line is that 9 Supreme Court justices said you can't do this. And I think that that sends a big message.
The New York Times had a story. The first story is people seem to have forgotten the Trump years. That's why he's doing so well. And they point out that 4.2 million 18-year-olds will vote for the first time they were in middle school. That's why Donald Trump is winning this election. We didn't really forget. You know, I might have forgot Bush 43's years. You could say things have been so crazy since and all the things that took place. Maybe we don't remember Reagan's years. I understand that. But this just happened. Saying amnesia is not a talking point that's going to fly.
Well, not only that, but the issue of immigration. You mean to tell me that people aren't affected by that in blue states, red states, every state that we've had exit polls and rolling polls? It's the number one issue. The president's age. That's not a big issue for young people. Of course it is. They see everything. And, when the White House comes out and says he's really active behind the scenes and he's fantastic, he's moving around. And
SNL had fun with that. So did Jon Stewart.
And so once it crosses over to that, it becomes an issue for young voters as well.
What were your thoughts over the – I know you're just trying to catch up with your crazy schedule. But over the weekend when you're watching the New York Times poll roll and the Wall Street Journal poll or the CBS poll and then the Fox poll all roll in and show that Trump is winning in almost every category.
Yeah.
Outside and white women.
And swing states. And has gone up in, African-American vote, black vote, Hispanics, major change. That's a major change from just 3.5 years ago. So I think that as you look at these polls heading in, the former president is in the poll position. There's a lot that we don't know. How do all these legal cases transition? How do independents and suburban women digest them? Right now, Republicans are saying this is a political effort and it's all designed to go after him. And there's a reason that they don't want him back in. And that's in their mind, at least according to the polls, that's a reason to push for him.
And when you talk about politics not playing a role or do playing a role, when I see his CFO, 74 years old, go back to Rikers Island for misreporting the size of his penthouse, we watch two Venezuelan illegal immigrants, or seven, beat up two cops the other day and not be held at all. There's a big story in the New York Post today that this bail reform, coupled with the leniency and the discovery, the time of discovery when a crime happens, the time of discovery to actually present the case, has allowed all these criminals to run rampant. But the 74-year-old CFO, back to Rikers Island, how can you not say, honey, I think this looks like there's two tiers of justice.
Right.
And I'm not calling you honey.
Oh, thank
you.
It's my fantasy spouse.
I appreciate that
clarification. It is like 2016, where voters in North Carolina said that Hillary Clinton cared more about what gender was in the bathroom than she did about the economic well-being of their state. There is this disconnect that people see it in their own lives, say, this cannot be right, what's happening.
Right.
And yet it's not clicking with the media or the administration. I want to say one thing. Tonight, what I think is going to be interesting is whenever the former president speaks, how he treats Nikki Haley and her supporters is going to be key for either bringing the party together or not. I think if you look at these polls, Republicans are coming home to the realization that the former president is going to be the nominee and that they would choose him over President Biden. But he still has work to do with independents and suburban women. And if he is the town hall Iowa caucus Donald Trump.
In South Carolina.
And South Carolina. It's one thing. If he is the New Hampshire Donald Trump, it's another thing. And I think he realizes that.
Yeah, I thought a little bit towards our interview at the end, he kind of realizes that. And keep in mind, Ted Cruz never even endorsed him. It was extremely personal in 2016. You covered every play-by-play of it.
Yeah, it went to the convention. I mean, not
Ted
endorsing
Cruz
it.
Got up there. Remember that? And the family came down and sat in the front row. Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it's the one thing about President Trump that makes you as somebody in the media, well, he'll talk to you. You go weeks without hearing Joe Biden say anything except for a shouted answer to a question. He'll sit down and give Brett Baer some quality time.
Yeah, that's true. He answers the questions.
Right. So, Brett, good luck tonight.
Thank you.
Are you going to take Vivarin? Is it going to be normal caffeine?
There'll be a lot of caffeine.
Right.
And a different tie.
Absolutely, a different tie, but same blue suit and same Brett Baer. Hey, guys, make sure you catch our coverage. Starts at what time?
6 for special reports, 7 for the coverage.
All right, so watch both. There'll be a quiz tomorrow. Keep it here. Arthur Brooks next.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The reason Donald Trump will win is because he's the greatest fighter we've ever had in the history of politics. I endorsed him a year ago. So a lot of us knew this comeback was coming. He's going to win because he's an authentic human being that relates to people on a personal level that, quite frankly, DeSantis and Nikki didn't do, and they're great people, but they didn't do. That's why people love Donald Trump.
And the people that do like him, love him. And the people that really don't like him, really don't like him in a way I've never seen before. But if you have a politician that's going to pack a house, we all know there's only one person they could do it these days. Arthur Brooks is with us. That's a little taste of his old life, the political life. He's a Parker Gilbert Montgomery professor and author of Build a Life You Want, The Art and Sciences of Getting Happier. He's also the Art and Sciences of Happiness online workshop, a series of 10 video lessons. With our downloadable resources, a podcast component, and other learning tools. So there is a podcast. I asked you if you had a podcast.
Yeah, yeah. It's a podcast component. I'm not doing a weekly podcast at this point, but I'm teaching. I teach.
So you're taking your course and you're putting it online? You broke it up into 10?
Yeah, I mean, I do. It's a workshop. So, you know, I teach a course at the Harvard Business School on the science of happiness, and there's a lot of ideas out there. And so I have workshops that are available for people who want to learn on their own. They're not everybody gets to go to Harvard, as it turns out.
Right. So I wanted to – I know, you know, you used to be very political.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Your old I was running a think tank in D.C. for 11 years.
Right.
Yeah.
That'll do it. So when you hear our leaders of today as opposed to other years, like when we roll old tapes back and hear what Truman was running on and
right.
what Nixon was running on and JFK, it's not what you could – not what the country could do for you, what you could do for your country. I can't imagine a politician saying this now. Are the nature of our politicians getting us down?
Yeah. So there's a big problem. There's a psychological problem in the United States, and this is one of the things that I teach. There's a concept called dark triad. Now, dark triad, it sounds cool, right? Like a band or
yeah.
something. A dark triad is a combination of three personality characteristics that happens in 7% of the population. Narcissism, which means it's all about me. Machiavellianism, which means I'm willing to hurt you to get stuff for me. And psychopathy, to be psychopathic, which means I have no remorse. 7% of the population has this constellation of personality characteristics. Under normal circumstances, they're not rewarded. People don't like them. People avoid them. People don't want to date them. People don't want to watch them on TV. But in certain circumstances where these malignant narcissistic bullies actually can take over the political system, that's what you start to see on both right and left. And that's what we have in America today. It's making us nuts.
But you drove it down. But fundamentally, don't people of strength or with the character or physical strength, however they always been leaders in society?
So, yeah, but they don't have to be dark triads. Lots of people with good character, with strong personalities, with a hardcore point of view who really are natural leaders, but they love their fellow human beings. They're not horribly narcissistic. They're not willing to hurt other people. They're not willing to do anything to get elected and anything to avoid losing. The trouble is that when we have bullies on both sides, that everybody's more afraid of the other bully than they dislike their own. And so the result of that is that most Americans, more than 70%, say Trump versus Biden. I don't want that. But OK, I guess I'll vote for my guy, whatever side they're on.
Why? So how does that affect the collective psyche in this country that you've noticed?
It's bad. It's a really bad thing. There have been really three big storms pushing down American happiness. And there's, you know, it's been going on for a long time. But go back to 2008, 2009. That was when everybody got social media on their devices. That was horrible for happiness, especially young adults.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
If I told you in 2008 this is going to happen, we'd be more connected,
yeah.
more diverse, we'll be smarter.
Nobody's lonely
accessibility,
anymore.
Yeah. Accessibility to knowledge.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. And everybody listening to us who's got adolescent kids, they know exactly what I'm talking about here. They're more isolated, more anxious, more lonely, more depressed.
And hard to concentrate.
Totally, totally. They're very distracted. And then of course, more recently, the storm was the coronavirus epidemic, where people got way lonelier. I mean, the symptoms of depression went up by fourfold and didn't come back down. Because of the horrendous – the way that we reacted to the epidemic, which was locking everybody down. You know, basically you can't go out, and if you do, you know, you're risking granny's life. And, you know, that whole thing that lasted was so horrible, especially for young adults. But in the middle of that and a slow rolling crisis that we've seen for American happiness is politics. Politics has been driving us crazy, making us anxious and actually depressed. And part of the reason is because you have political parties and media telling people – that if somebody disagrees with you, you got to cut them off. 1 in 6 Americans is not talking to a family member today because of politics, which is insanity. Family is one of the core parts of the happiness equation. You can't be happy if you start cutting family members off. The only reason to have a schism with family is abuse, and differences of political opinion are not abuse. This is appealing to ancient structures in the human brain that say this is in-group, out-group, my people, their people. It's tribal.
So, Arthur, you have a knowledge of politics, and now you know you have an expertise in happiness. Are you going to tell me that Kennedy and Nixon going at it with controversial ends to the election? We had a different reaction in the 60s when we were anti-Vietnam, in the middle of racial unrest. It was different then?
It was actually a lot more like now than people recognize. Yeah, for sure. And so you look at 1968, 1969, there were something like 700 political bombings. In some ways, it was much worse. But then the country tends to come back together, fall apart, come back together. This is a normal thing that we're seeing. What we need next – and remember, 1973, 1974, Watergate, the whole thing.
Sure.
It was disruptive. It was the worst
double
political
interest,
parties.
Double figure interest rates.
You're absolutely right.
No one's buying a house.
And then what? Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan came along. Look, my family was completely against Reagan. I come from a liberal household in Seattle, Washington, of academics and artists, you can imagine, right? But I remember I was in high school, Reagan got elected, and I heard him, and I thought, he loves me. I don't even know him, but I actually think he loves me. And it converted me, man. I mean, Brian, I became a different person because of the love that Ronald Reagan had for the United States and indirectly for me. And leaders can do this.
And just keep in mind, too, and I feel weird saying this to you, but I remember in high school that people thought he was dumb. They thought he was reckless. They thought he was dangerous. And the first time I realized how much he was beloved was when he died.
Right.
And that funeral and the turnout. But when we were living through him, yeah. You think we appreciated him, even though he did win 49 states of the reelection?
Yeah, no, for sure. So the key thing to keep in mind is that any company or family or community or even country has one of two basic polarities culturally. It's either based on fear or it's based on love. Fear and love are opposites. They're psychological opposites. Hate and love are not opposites. Hate comes from fear. And so that doesn't mean that if you have a love-based polarity in your family that there is no problem.
Hate and love aren't opposites?
No. Fear and love are opposites.
So interesting.
And this is a biblical principle too, that perfect love drives out fear. But this is also – it goes back to ancient philosophies, and social psychologists understand this is true today. They're different parts of the brain. Fear and love turn each other off in the human brain. And so the result of that is that when politicians are using fear-based language to drive us apart, what they're doing is that they're suffocating love that we have for our friends and family. And that's why we're lonely and depressed in America today.
Do you also think, building on what you just said, if I win, you lose?
Right.
That attitude gets us nowhere. For example, now we understand if Trump wins, democracy is over.
Yeah.
There might not be any more elections.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And Hitler, excuse me. Really? Hitler, and maybe on the other side, they'll say the border's going to be wide open. We're going to be getting all these other illegal immigrants. Crime's going to run rampant. You see what's going on in New York City. So you do think that leaders should be more responsible in their rhetoric?
Oh, for sure. But they're doing this because they're trying to appeal to these ancient structures in our brains to make us disgusted by other people. There's a part of the brain called the insula. Its whole job is making you feel disgust, so you're afraid of a pathogen. Like something in your fridge smells bad, this part of the brain will be stimulated, so you'll throw it away and not eat it. It's evolved is what it comes from. When politicians use disgust-based language, they say that other person hates America, that other person wants to destroy your family. They'll make you feel disgusted, and you'll have the same reaction. It'll hijack your brain. This is exactly what they're doing to us. They're dehumanizing us. Our people are dehumanizing them as their followers.
Why do we care more about politics today than ever before?
Well, the truth is that politics is more ever present because the media takes a different role in our lives, is what we find. It's much, much easier to be surrounded by information. So before the internet, for example, it was the nightly news and a newspaper, and most of the day you weren't getting any news at all. Well, the truth of the matter is that on your device, you're always being delivered real-time information, and people get quite addicted to it, and they distract themselves. They're never bored. And one of the ways that people distract themselves is the overconsumption of news. And that's a very bad practice for your brain.
So, you know, there's so much to take in. I mean, you've made happiness a science.
Right.
And is it a choice?
Yeah. Well, happiness, it's a choice to actually pursue it. So you can't be happy because, I mean, cosmically happy, this side of heaven. I mean, you and I believe that if we're lucky, we're going to get to heaven. That's pure happiness. But
you got
to
know somebody.
Yeah.
Right?
You got a guy.
Yeah, I got a guy to get you in.
But what we really want is, you know, my co-author is Oprah Winfrey on this work, and she talks about happierness, which is exactly the right way to think about it. Now, pure happiness means no negative emotions. You're going to have negative emotions. Life has aversive events, has things going on, and you need negative emotions to keep you alive because there are threats in life. You need to be sad sometimes and angry or afraid or disgusted, for sure. Life is like that. But you can get happier by understanding the science. That's why we put together this workshop that people can actually take and learn more about it and start to apply it and start to bring it to other people. And what I really want is for people to start seeing themselves as happiness teachers.
But if I'm so focused on my happiness, am I selfish?
No, on the contrary, you got to put your own oxygen mask on first, Brian. If you're going to be somebody who's going to bring – look, you have tons of people who watch you on television and listen to you on the radio. You have a responsibility as a leader to lift people up and bring them together, but you can't do it if you're miserable. You can't do it. Unhappy leaders can't have happy followers.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way.
But you have to focus on what makes you happy.
Yeah, and what makes you happy is the same thing that makes everybody else happy. Everybody feels like a special snowflake in their happiness, but the truth is it's just four things: faith, family, friends, and work. Work that serves other people, whether it's for taking care of your family or working in a job, those are the big four.
So this, I think some things are almost mislabeled. For example, when kids play sports, I go, if they're not having fun, don't let them play.
Yeah, that's wrong.
It's wrong.
It's wrong.
Because I go, what do you mean by fun? Like, you know, tag, like fun, smiling. When fun is learning to be in a team, learning your role in a team, learning to listen to a coach.
Yeah.
Well, trying to win that game, trying to play the best you can, trying to get the most out of your skills. I don't watch people running sprints and thinking, look how happy they are.
No.
They're focused on a mission. How does the mission play a role in your happiness?
You have to have a direction in your life. This is, you know, meaning in life is a funny thing.
It just means when you retire, you oftentimes people go depressed.
Yeah, for sure.
There goes the mission.
Yeah, no. And so part of meaning is what we call purpose. And purpose is goals and direction. You can't have a sense of meaning if you don't have goals and direction in your life. So I work with young people. I mean, I teach 20-somethings at, you know, at the business school. But I'm working with college students constantly. And I have young adult kids. My kids are in their 20s. All three of my kids are in their 20s. I'm talking constantly about seeing the future, seeing what you're moving toward, not to be attached to it because it's going to change. You're not going to get exactly everything that you want, but to have intention without that attachment and moving in a direction. You must have those things.
Do you feel like a therapist? How are you different from a therapist then?
You know, I'm a teacher, not a therapist. True. I'm not saying I'm going to fix you.
It seems like you're coaching a lot of people in a way that therapists would.
Well, a good therapist is really a good teacher. That's really what it's all about. Because, you know, a lot of people go to therapy. I don't, but a lot of people do. And I know a lot of people who do therapy. I know a lot of therapists. The best ones are the ones who teach you about you, who are helping you get your PhD in you-ness, not to, you know, fix you and to, you know, to blow your mind in every single session, but for you to uncover what's actually going on. And there are lots of ways to do that. There's a whole suite of techniques that I teach called metacognition, which sounds fancy, but it isn't. It just means thinking about yourself and interrogating your feelings. I talk about journaling. I talk about meditation. I talk about prayers of petition, which for Christian people like me is super important.
What does that mean?
Prayers of petition, that means you're offering something up to God. And when you do that, you can't actually – the emotions are produced in a part of your brain called the limbic system. It's very animal. When you actually interrogate your emotions, you move the experience of those emotions to the most human parts of your brain, and you can manage them so they don't manage you. But you have to do something on purpose. Writing them down actually moves them to the human parts of your brain. Praying to God, actually articulating these things, I'm feeling this thing, Lord, can you help me? That moves it to the more human parts of your brain. And that's just the same thing that therapy is supposed to be doing. But, you know, you don't have to go someplace and pay $100.
So when people say there's a science to prayer, there is a human science.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, the research is completely overwhelming. It's super important. I mean, people who are religious but don't pray, they're leaving all the value on the table. I mean, you know, regardless of what your actual religious views are, I believe God actually wants to hear from me because we have a friendship. But even more than that, I actually know as somebody who's dedicated to the science of this stuff, looking at the neuroscience of this, it changes your brain.
Were you different if I met you 10 years ago, 15 years ago? Would you did you always have this deep thought about what's going to make me feel happier while you were competing? In your think tank world.
It was hard. It was much harder. So when I was running an organization, I mean, I was raising money and giving speeches, and I was in the rough and tumble of Washington, D.C. all the time. And I realized that I wasn't happy, and I wanted to be. Look, I'm a social scientist. My PhD is in behavioral sciences. I've been doing this work for a long time. But I wasn't taking my own medicine. I wasn't doing research on what I really needed. My wife finally took me by the shoulders and said, hey, man, you got your PhD. Why don't you use it on something useful? And so I actually retired and went to Harvard to teach happiness. That's why.
Well, man, you really listen.
Oh, yeah.
You put all men to shame. All right, so listen, stick around for a few more minutes. The Art and Science of Happiness online workshop is a series of 10 video lessons, downloadable resources, a podcast component as well. Where do we get it?
ArthurBrooks.com.
Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Arthur Brooks, the best-selling author multiple times, has got that book he wrote with Oprah Winfrey, Build the Life You Want, The Art and Sciences of Getting Happier. Arthur, from concept to creation to release, What's this experience been like with Oprah? Did a lot of things promoting it together. The friendship has taken root.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's funny because you and I have been in an enviable position of meeting a lot of interesting and very well-known people. Generally, they're not the same in private as they are in public.
She is.
She's completely the same. I mean, it's like everybody admires her for her public persona. And in person, when we're having dinner at her dinner table or, you know, whatever, just hanging out, she's exactly the same person. She's humble. She's nice. What she really cares about is making life better for other people. That's what she's used her platform for, which is why she can be this prominent and still very happy.
And what did you the book and the response, what's it been like?
It's been incredible. I mean, it was number one New York Times bestseller for multiple weeks. It was spent the entire fall on the New York Times bestseller list, which was a thrill, which is great. And it gave us an opportunity to reach millions and millions of people. It's in 30 languages already. It's great.
And do you think you'll do something else? I mean, did this just lay the groundwork for the next book?
Yeah, we're talking. Oprah and I are talking about what we can do next to bring the science of happiness to more people, more people, more people. Because that's really what – we have the same mission but different means of doing it. And if she still had her show, then I would just go on her show a lot. But this is different. So we're looking for new ways. We're looking for ideas right now on how to do this bigger.
And is this a rich people problem trying to be happy?
Not really, because everybody's got the same happiness equation. Faith, family, friends, and work. Rich, poor, everybody else, black, white, every single religion. We all want the same things.
And here's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
Does money get you happiness?
No, it does not.
Does it play a good role?
Well, what it does is money is at very relatively low levels eliminates many sources of unhappiness. But above relatively low levels, all that matters is how you spend it. The way to spend it is on the people that you love, experiences with the people you love, because happiness is love, Brian.
John Madden said that term. He goes, I like to have money because it gave me the freedom to do what I want.
That's a good thing, as long as you're using that freedom to love people more.
All right. Add Arthur Brooks to find out about his seminars, his series, and his books. Arthur, great to see you again.
Thanks, man.
And I feel happy because you chose to come in.
It makes me happy to see you every time, Brian.
Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. We're on 43rd Street and Broadway. The Haley Group has bought the Super PAC. Bought a huge sign, electronic sign that calls Donald Trump grumpy and Joe Biden incompetent. So anybody who thinks that Nikki Haley is going to go quietly into the night, even after Super Tuesday, I'm not too sure about that. That's a lot of money to put together for a couple of days. Meanwhile, 15 states are on the docket. Well, following this story, Hamas came out and said, I don't know what you have heard, believe it or not, but we have not broken off talks with Israel. There's still some talks about getting those hostages and prisoner swaps done. We'll discuss that. And there is an announcement on another network, something I thought all along, that Michelle Obama has made it clear to NBC she is not running. So count her out, Democrats. You're stuck with Joe Biden, Gavin Newsom, or probably Governor Whitmer. Maybe Governor Shapiro, but he's got no charisma. And by the way, special thanks to WRVA, 1140 AM and 96.1 FM. We're thrilled to be carried this week for the first time, hopefully beginning of a long relationship, decades long, a lot of Christmas parties. And Politics and Pints, March 20th. There's some tickets left. If you're in the Richmond, Virginia area, I want to meet you in person. And again, there's beer. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Issue number one, two, and three is absolutely the border. Folks were telling me, you know, they're tired. We're exhausted. We're done with all of the chaos. We're done with Biden not doing anything.
Two legal setbacks for the broken border bills, and they're hurting the ability for Texas and Arizona to control the hemorrhaging of illegals that are flooding this nation. Why we are now perhaps have to wait for the Supreme Court or even the next election.
Number two.
I am working with a number of my colleagues to revive legislation that we had to set up a process by which we could determine that someone who committed insurrection is disqualified by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment.
What a clown. That's Jamie Raskin, of course. Trump trials deliver a win for the former president. Yet the same cast of characters, Eric Swalwell and that idiot Jamie Raskin, are going back and trying to get rid of legislation to ban him from the ballot. Perhaps they know that he can beat Joe Biden. Has anyone thought about just trying to beat your opponent? at the ballot box and not through the court system?
Number one.
I won in South Carolina against her. So look, there's no path for Nikki. I wish Nikki the best. But she stood up and many, many times said, I'd never run against our president. You know, those things you don't like to see.
We lost in 2018. We lost in 2020. We lost in 2022. We can want to change the country all day long. But if we can't win an election, we can't do any of that.
Yeah, a couple of things. Nikki Haley did go back and asked the president, say, listen, I'm going to run again. He said, best of luck. So did Rick Scott do the same. Tim Scott did the same thing. Super Tuesday is here. Trump and Haley square off for perhaps the final time. What both say about each other, Biden, and the chance they will once again come together on some level. It's going to be tough. Couple of things. Let's bring in Lieutenant Colonel Alan West to discuss this. He's over in Texas. He used to be over in Florida. Congressman there, a longtime military man. Colonel, welcome back.
It's always good to be with you, Brian. Happy Super Tuesday.
Same to you. It's going to be fun, but there's really not going to be a lot of drama, I don't think. I mean, right now it's 273-43 in favor of Trump. Last night he won with 84% of the vote in North Carolina. Him and Governor Pergram, by the way, are really tight. 860 votes, 864 votes are at stake now. So as we look at this, the places where Nikki Haley could score would be Alaska, Maine, maybe a little bit in Minnesota. She says, as long as I'm in contention, I'll continue. Is that in contention?
No, it's really not in contention. She just wants to be able to keep some type of oxygen flowing into her campaign. And it's very interesting. You saw Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and the Senator
Susan Collins.
Maine, Susan Collins both endorsed Nikki Haley. And I think the other thing that Ms. Ambassador Haley is banking on is you have quite a few open primary elections taking place in this Super Tuesday. Texas is one of those. So maybe she's hoping that there'll be some crossover Democrats, as you saw in New Hampshire. But it's still not going to be enough to, you know, resuscitate or keep her campaign, which is on life support right now. So many folks are backing out from contributing. And I believe that she just thinks that, you know, Jamie Raskin is her best friend right now. They can try to tie up Donald Trump in the courts.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing I've said to you before. I'm a big fan of Nikki Haley. I have nothing against her, but I just really question why she's running like a Democrat. Why when Gavin Newsom comes out and says it's my best surrogate is Nikki Haley, is because she's using Democratic attack plans. And then she said that, you know, the court system let it play out. Please. All these things are trumped up. Trump is no choir boy, but there's no way 91 charges in four court cases are what he deserves.
No, you're absolutely right. He's not an insurrectionist. He didn't commit any acts of sedition. He's not charged with that. As a matter of fact, there, you know, hardly anyone with the January 6th is charged with insurrection, sedition, or anything like that. Basically, it is breaking and entering and disrupting a governmental procedure, which should not be titling you to a felony offense and sitting in a gulag, basically, and having your rights undermined. So, I think that Nikki Haley's approach is what is turning people off, and you cannot win a Republican nomination if you're, you know, basically out there running as a Democrat seeking Democrat support.
Here's what Trump said about that yesterday. Cut eight.
I just say to the people that are watching now, if you could go out and vote, because it's not Haley. She's not a problem. I think she's very negative for the party, but she's not a problem in terms of winning because we're winning by a lot. The only place we expected to lose was D.C. because that's the swamp. Tomorrow, we could very well win every state in record numbers. That's what we're hoping for. They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. And I think it's going to be record setting. I think. I hope so.
So, I mean, he could have a clean sweep. I actually don't think it's negative to have him run, show up at these states and give them and get familiar with what their issues are, even if it's more again in the general election. Do you think that Nikki Haley makes Trump a better candidate? Do you think Trump makes Nikki Haley a better candidate?
Well, I think that definitely she makes him a better candidate in that he has to be focused. He has to talk about the issues. He has to be measured. He has to be presidential. He cannot play into her talking points, which are about him standing for chaos and confusion and everything. If there's one person that has brought so much chaos and confusion to the United States of America and across the entire globe, that's Joe Biden. So I think it's very important that, you know, Donald Trump does not fall into the trap that Nikki Haley's trying to set. I don't think that he makes her a better candidate. She's just out there being herself.
All right, so a couple of things happening. As you know, Texas passed that the state law that said that they want to be able to deport people at, when they come here illegally right away. They want to put up their own fence. Yeah. And now it's been stayed by the courts because they said it's the federal government. Their feeling is it's the Supreme Court's opinion that it's an evolving it's the Supreme Court's opinion that they're going to stay it and analyze it. That it's the federal government's job to enforce the border, that the state can't do it. So they're not doing it. So the state should be able to do it. In Arizona, the state legislature tried to do it. The governor stopped it. It's so frustrating, Colonel.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. No one is abiding by the rule of law. And Brian, you and I have had this discussion many times. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution is known as the Guarantee Clause. It says that the federal government, the United States federal government, is supposed to guarantee every state protection from invasion. If the federal government does not do that, their enumerated duty and responsibility that they're supposed to guarantee to every state, then Article 1, Section 10, Clause number 3 says exactly what a state can do when actually invaded, when they are in imminent danger without any admit of delay. So the thing that just is so perplexing to me is people are involved invoking the Supremacy Clause, but the Supremacy Clause has three very important words, in pursuance thereof. If the federal government is not doing something that is in pursuance thereof of the Constitution, the rule of law, then the states do not have to follow. They do not have to abide by it. So these rulings are really undermining the sovereignty of the United States of America and the rule of law, because as you put in this stay on states being able to do something, guess what? Millions more are going to come across this border illegally, to include single military age males. And guess what? Maybe we will have more murders of innocent American women like we just saw at the University of Georgia with Laken Riley.
So now the Supreme Court, Justice Alito says, has issued an administrative stay temporarily blocking Texas's strict immigration law, SB4, after the Biden administration brought to the court to ask the court to intervene. So anybody listening right now who really honestly believes that Joe Biden wants to solve the border problem, he is actually suing to make sure Texas does not solve their border problem. The law remains blocked until March 13th at 5 o'clock to give the justices time to decide how to proceed. Alito also gave Texas until the evening of March 11th to respond to the Biden administration's request. Now, these stats don't lie. 70% of all apprehensions in the month of February when this passed were in blue states. It's Arizona, California, and New Mexico. Why? Because Texas is doing it themselves in as many areas as possible. And first and foremost is that place, Shelby Park, right?
Yes, correct. Down in Eagle Pass. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Brian.
In Arizona, they came out with the state rule to do the same exact thing. The legislative, they call it SB 1231, but their idiot governor, the Democrat, Katie Hobbs, who's an embarrassment, said this, cut 30.
This bill does not secure our border. On the contrary, it will be harmful for communities and businesses in our state and a burden for law enforcement personnel. I know there's frustration by the federal government's failure to secure our border, but this bill is not the solution.
It is a start. And doing nothing and waiting for Joe Biden is a sign of doom.
Well, this is why the whole issue of the border is the number one issue going into this 2024 election cycle. It's an economic issue. It's a drug trafficking issue. Americans are losing their lives. It's a human and sex trafficking issue. It's a terrorist trafficking issue. It undermines our health care, our educational systems, everything. And for the Democrats to continue to play this game with our sovereignty and continue to allow millions of people to pour into this country illegally, hundreds of thousands every month, the American people see this. The genie is out of the bottle, and there is no way they're going to be able to put it back in. There is no way they're going to be able to shift blame to anyone else but themselves.
So in New York, they've only gotten $49 million from the federal government on a illegal immigrant problem that's costing us minimum $10 billion a year. They've gotten $49 million with an M on $10 billion problem. They were promised $150 million. And this is Democrat governor, Democrat mayor, Democrat president. And they did this to the Democratic cities. Are we going to get to a point where people realize it's right and wrong, not right and left, and start voting for Republicans?
Yeah, I mean, look at what is happening in Chicago. When you have the black community and citizens there and some of their leaders coming out and speaking out against a black mayor, Brandon Johnson, there in Chicago. Look at Eric Johnson, I think. What's his name? Last name? Eric Adams, I'm sorry. He's feeling the heat. He's feeling the pressure. All of these blue cities and blue states, which were sanctuaries, they're starting to feel the heat and pressure because when you shut down people's schools and saying we're going to allow illegals to come off the streets to stay there, and you got to figure out what to do with your kids at the last minute. People are tired of this. So, yes, I believe that folks are going to vote for their safety and security. And, you know, Athens, Georgia, there in that county, I think it's Clark County in Georgia, that is one of the most liberal counties in the state of Georgia. I can tell you that right now people are thinking about changing things in the city of Athens and that county as well.
Because of that brutal murder and the fact that the brother Absolutely. Also got caught shoplifting, overstaying a green card, lying, and the brother was allowed to run rampant too, which gave the green light from that other killer to leave New York and come down there. Thanks so much, Colonel. Always exciting. Hopefully Super Tuesday will begin to get a nominee and the inevitable rematch will be official. Colonel Alan West, thank you.
All the best, Brian. Thank you.
All right, we come back. I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. If you're coming from WRVA, we'll put you first. I want to hear from you and what people of Virginia care about, although I've been there quite a lot. A lot of soccer tournaments, Jefferson Cup. I was played there, and I coached there, and my kids all were in that tournament. And it's around now, I believe, right in March, a big college recruiting place. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And frankly gives him a way out of being held accountable at the ballot box.
Unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong. They're not doing their job on a lot of these big issues.
Yeah. A refusal to hold this man accountable and those folk who engaged in insurrection.
It just goes against what our judicial system should be about.
Donald Trump, I believe, is a danger to American democracy.
He can still be the president of the United States. And I thought that the 14th Amendment and our framers knew better.
Right. Our framers are really dumb in retrospect. And everybody knows the smartest people are on The View, Sonny Hostin. That's the reaction to the president with a 9-0 Supreme Court decision. 9-0. But of course, they're not smart enough for these panels. Decided that the president cannot be kept off ballot. So attention, Maine, attention, Colorado. Nice try. It just goes to show you how outrageously political everything is, even when you're a legal analyst, perhaps, apparently. Cliff, you're in Waterbury, Connecticut. Hey, Cliff.
Yeah, it don't matter. I'm in America, so hey, it doesn't matter. Hey, but listen, I want to respond to this. Now, listen, this is going to be a problem. Now, Trump was not found guilty of an insurrection.
Not charged.
But isn't that what, right, well, isn't that what Jack Smith's case is all about? Now, if it's heard before the general election in November 5th, and he's found guilty and charged with inciting an insurrection.
No, but, that's not the charge, Cliff. He's not even being charged by that by Jack Smith.
Okay, so what is he being charged
Jack with? Smith, it says on January 6th, he's not charged with insurrection. I guess having a rally or using insightful words, but not insurrection. He's not being charged with that.
But that's applicable, O'Brien, to the insurrection. So if
but they didn't use
guilty,
that term. That's why this is such a dry hole. There was no foundation on it. That's why it was 9-0. It wasn't if he was charged with insurrection. It's a matter of Jack Smith running it. He knows he can't prove it. That means he had the plot and plan to pull it off. There was no plot and plan to pull it off. Do you see that idiot Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, as well as Jenna Ellis? They were not plotting and planning along with Mark Meadows together. They wanted to have a rally. It got out of control. That's clearly what happened, or else he would have charged it. Jared, you're in Texas. Hey, Jared.
How's it going, Brian?
What's on your mind?
After the last 3 years of seeing the millions of illegal immigrants coming across our border wide open with the Biden administration giving them money and health care and kicking veterans out of the VA so that they can house these people, That is the very definition of treason, giving aid and comfort to a foreign enemy. Biden needs to be tried for treason for what he's done.
Not going to happen in 8 months. It won't go through because of the Senate, and you're not going to get 60 votes in the Senate. But, Jared, if I was looked fundamentally on what hurt our country the most, that has hurt the country far more than Watergate, far more than weapons of mass destruction, because that was unintentional. We actually thought they did have it. They didn't have it. This has allowed millions of people here. We don't have a true count in here. And it was intentional, it seems.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We have to support Ukraine. The speaker does support Ukraine. And I do think that probably the most important development that occurred last week was that minority leader Hakeem Jeffries came forward and said that the Democrats will not join with the small number of Republicans, frequently referred to as the Chaos Caucus, who say to the speaker that we will remove the speaker if he moves forward on Ukraine, moves forward on spending bills. They cannot do that without Democrat support. He said Democrats will not support that. As long as we're moving forward with bipartisan bills, that includes funding the government, that includes Ukraine, that includes Israel. I believe as a result of that step, that Speaker Johnson now has the leeway and the flexibility to work through Congress and the Appropriations Committee.
That is a guy who knows and who is firmly in support of aid to Ukraine. That is Congressman Mike Turner. And he made it clear that you're not going to be able to oust Mike Johnson like you did Kevin McCarthy. But the problem is, will Mike Johnson put this forward? He knows Ukraine needs aid. But this politics and the broken border, which it should be a priority, for some reason Ukraine is paying the price because the linkage together has not produced the legislation on the border to move forward. Meanwhile, Ukraine has to fight on. They get no pause. Dan Bilak joins us now, member of the Territorial Defense Force of Ukraine, former chief investment advisor to the prime minister of Ukraine. Daniel, welcome back.
Great to be back, Brian. Thanks.
How would you characterize things on the ground right now in Ukraine?
Well, Brian, they're probably the grimmest that they've been since the beginning of the war. We feel like, as Yogi Berra said, deja vu all over again. We're scrambling for ammunition. We're scrambling for shells. We're struggling to hold the territory that we've held now for 2 years when we drove the Russians out of Kiev, Kherson, and Kharkiv. We've had to give up some territory that we cost us dearly in the lives and blood of our men, just because we don't have enough to fight back on. You know, they're lobbing 10,000 shells a day at us, and we can only respond with about 2,000. And, you know, we've seen a big increase in the bombings of our cities as a result, because we're running low on anti-missile and anti-aircraft munitions. It was just a horrific situation. You may have heard of in Odessa on Saturday where a Shahed Iranian missile or drone hit an apartment building, killing 12 people, including 5 children, including an evangelical mother and her child. The funeral's tomorrow. It's really galvanized the evangelical community here that seems to be more and more targeted by the Russians whenever they go into a town. You know, 10 days ago, a pastor was pulled out of his house barefooted, tortured for 48 hours, murdered, and left in the street. And this systemic pattern we see throughout, you know, so giving up any territory, giving up land, means that, you know, people who are just like you and me and your listeners are going to die. I mean, they're fingerprinting Protestant churchgoers to identify them, and then 26 pastors have been executed. All of this is on a website, RussiaTorturesChristians.org, and it's just horrific. And Americans need to know this, because there's very strong linkages with the American evangelical community. And, Russians are terrorists, and they're one of the four horses of the apocalypse, if you like, you know, with North Korea, Iran, and China. And this is just pure evil. These are terrorists.
So people should understand that, too. And, you know, I firmly agree with you. And Senator Dan Sullivan does, too. He's a military guy. He's on armed services. Here's what he said Sunday, cut 36.
60% of this supplemental, and look, it's not a perfect bill. The House can make it better. 60% goes into our ability to build weapons for America. Everything from nuclear subs. By the way, almost 40% of our attack subs are in maintenance right now. We don't have the industrial capacity to protect ourselves. Xi Jinping is scared to death of American subs. This is about our industrial capacity to protect America first. And then, of course, we need to get some of these weapons to our allies who are facing existential threats, whether it's Taiwan, Israel, and Ukraine. And I think when you talk about it from that perspective, it should unite Republicans, not divide them.
And for some reason, it is dividing them. And I think that some of it has to do with the fact that we have our own domestic issues when it comes to this border, and no one's paying attention. And this is the only thing that got the president's attention. So how close? What do they tell you is the chance of you getting this weaponry? And has Europe stepped up the way they said they would?
Well, Europe's had to step up. They are stepping up, but nobody can close the gap for the next 9 months at least, like the United States, because it's our key ally. It has all of the major kit. You know, the Europeans have really woken up. I mean, it's a year late. I mean, it's too bad. You know, had the weapons that we've received not been slow walked, we probably wouldn't be in this position. But, you know, the Senator Sullivan was absolutely correct, is that, you know, $40 billion out of the $60 billion is going to stay in the United States, create American jobs. And, you know, we've been getting, as you know, Brian, old kit. And even though it said, you know, we've got $48 billion in assistance, a lot of that, that's on book value. That has not been written down. Some of this stuff is really old. It's from the 70s and 80s, the HIMARS, the M777 artillery, even the F-16s we're getting is old. And America is going to get rid of this stuff that would have had to have been disposed for billions of dollars at American taxpayer expense. We're going to dispose it for you for free. And then you get new kit to defend yourself and to send China and Russia a message that America is large and in charge. You know, the frustrating part, Brian, is that we can win. We can still win this war. This is not over. We know how to defeat them. We've taken back 50% of the territory that they took at the beginning of the war. We have taken out one-third of the Black Sea Fleet, and we don't even have a Navy. We fight smart with new generation water drones. So we're doing it. We're developing our own capabilities along with American weapons that we've received. You know, don't abandon us now. We can do this, and this is in America's interest. We're fighting for freedom and democracy, certainly in Europe and around the world, and that's a good thing for America, I would think.
Yeah, Daniel Bilak with us. Daniel, I also understand that in Moldova, these breakaway provinces have contacted Russia. Hey, help protect us.
Yeah, they didn't go quite as far as everybody expected them to. Look, Russia is playing not just the military game. Russia is waging war on all fronts. It weaponizes everything, including the fears of people in the United States, some officials, and in Europe of escalation and all that kind of stuff. They use every aspect of it. And America is being hit right now with a massive disinformation campaign about Ukraine, about Moldova, and about Russia's intentions itself. And I think that's part of the problem in Congress as well. We're trying to get the true story out there. But, you know, we're your allies. We're your friends. We're common cause with you. We believe in freedom. And we believe that freedom provides security. And you know, this is a war. We're going to fight to the end because we have no choice. This is a war of extermination. If the Russians end the war, they go home. If we finish the war, we get rolled and Eastern Europe gets rolled and we get exterminated. So, we really would like to see the American people stay behind us. We're so grateful to the American people for everything that they've done for us. And we just got to see this through to the end, Brian.
I hear you. Dan, be well. Hang in there. And hopefully Congress will give you the money you deserve. Daniel Bilak, thank you.
God bless the people of the United States, Brian.
All right, great. So listen, Stuart Varney's coming up next, and I'm going to be going on with him, and we're going to be talking about what's happening, too, about this is not just about Super Tuesday, just about Donald Trump, Nikki Haley, and Joe Biden. It's also about the governor's race over in North Carolina. It's also about the Senate race over in California, where Steve Garvey, by the way, is now leading. I think a lot has to do with Adam Schiff's campaign trying to make him the number one or number two person. Why? Because they believe California will never go to a Republican, and they believe by putting Garvey in as number one or number two, he will survive into the jungle primary, and Adam Schiff, who's the front runner, not Katie Porter, would rather go against Steve Garvey, the longtime first baseman, 74 years old, with the Dodgers and Padres over, you know, to beat a Republican's a lot easier in California. However, I will say this. If Steve Garvey can pick up the pace, starting appear more and more, and start maybe getting some Republican support, Adam Schiff has zero charisma. He's got three very disparaging nicknames, and he's earned all three of them. My hope is people understand that there has to be a change, especially in California, where I understand there when there are conservatives in California, man, are they ever. If you go to Orange County, specifically Huntington Beach, that's where you'll find them. Central California, another area, and parts of San Diego. Extremely conservative. When we come back, I'll go with Stuart Varney. But stay on the line, because right after Stuart, I usually have a couple of minutes on the back end. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here on a Super Tuesday.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back. We'll wait for FBN Stuart Varney to get involved, but keep in mind, too, on the back end, you can call 1-866-408-7669, and I'll be able to take your calls in the back half. This morning on Fox & Friends, Nikki Haley and Donald Trump joined us within a half hour of each other, and Nikki Haley brought up the point is everybody wants me to concede and wants to know if I'll reconcile with Trump. Would he reconcile with me? And number two, would he endorse me? So let's listen into Stuart.
Almost here on the East Coast. That means it's time for Brian Kilmeade, who appears miraculously on the right-hand side of the screen. All right, Brian, Trump joined you on Fox & Friends this morning. Here's what he had to say about the Democrats trying again to kick Trump off the ballot. Roll that tape.
Well, it's the same losers. They're real losers. If they spent their time focusing on the country and making America great again, that would be a lot better than just wasting their time. I've been going through it for years, beating them for years, and it's the same voices, the same faces. They never stop. They don't care about our country. I don't think they love our country, frankly. They love themselves or their movement, and it's a sick movement. And I'm just focused on winning an election. We have to beat Biden. He's the worst president in history.
You know, Brian, I think Biden's legal attack on Trump has stalled. And frankly, I think it's fallen to pieces. What say you?
I take it inning by inning. And I think in this inning, Trump won big, and he 9-0. And for Jamie Raskin to roll out, along with Eric Swalwell, to come out and say, we're going to get legislation that disallows Donald Trump for being on the ballot, being that he sponsored an insurrection. Number one, he wasn't charged with insurrection. Believe me, Jack Smith wanted to charge him with an insurrection. It hasn't been convicted of an insurrection because he hasn't been charged of an insurrection. Why he's going to go waste people's time again while in the minority is insane. And that's what Trump brought up. These people don't want to stop. And I'll give you my prediction. If Trump wins in November, they start an impeachment the next day, especially if he loses the House. And the Republicans have really gone out of their way to make it possible to lose the House. I think you agree with me on that. So if they lose that, they're going to start right away. And they're just relentless. They don't understand it's not in the country's interest for this. Now, next up, you got the Alvin Bragg case. That could be another win for the president if he can get a reasonable jury in New York. The statute of limitations, number one, should be tossing this thing out in the street. And then you got the Georgia case. Have you ever seen more inept people with unethical people in your life try to take on something as substantial as the President of the United States? I think that could get tossed. And that leaves us with the document case, which the earliest is July. The Trump team says, no way. Try end of August. And then what are we left with? I mean, we're left with
nothing
and a sprint to November. My fear is they get the documents case or one of them queued up in September and it locks the president in for 2 months, and you just sit there and say, he can't campaign, he can't go to rallies, he's not going to be able to travel around. let alone the conviction. And then if you read the Robert Hur report, which I did, there's no way you're still going to go after the president on the documents case. You just go over for decades, 40 years. This guy's jamming, leaving skiffs with top secret information for 40 years, leaving it in his garage behind his couch. And now you're going to go convict his challenger for it?
Yeah, yeah. I sense a note of exasperation in your voice there, Brian. Listen to this. Republican Steve Garvey is practically tied with Democrat Adam Schiff for California's Senate seat. Garvey barely campaigned. Brian, this is California, the bluest of blue states. What's going on here?
Well, Katie Porter's not a good candidate. It's a juggle primary. So Adam Schiff wants Steve Garvey. So since Garvey's got name recognition, a lot of charisma, a lot of poise, he was known in Los Angeles and in San Diego for his baseball career, multiple-year All-Star, Padres and Dodgers. He goes out there, knows a lot of Republicans, and he's galvanized Republican support, but he's also getting money from Adam Schiff and his super PAC because Adam Schiff wants this fight. So Adam Schiff is trying to knock out Katie Porter and take on Garvey because he thinks he can win in the general. But Garvey's doing a lot better technically the last, even though we don't love the poll at Fox, evidently we don't support the poll, but he is up 2 points in that last poll. So we'll see, but he's got to pick up the pace. Come on, Stuart. He's an athlete. He should be doing five events a day like Schwarzenegger did.
You had me going there for a second. I thought a Republican could win a statewide election in California. I'm beginning to think that maybe that's just a distant dream. Out of time, Brian. Thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, stay with yourself, Stuart. Thank you.
The Attorney General of
1-866-408-7669. So that's the thing with Steve Garvey. Number one, he was in our studio. He's a great guy. Big name, big celebrity in Los Angeles, has a lot of friends. He says, listen, all I want is 1 6-year term. He's 74 now. It brings him up to 80 years old, by the way. His 80 is like a Joe Biden's 50. That's how strong this guy is, how fit he is. Doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, obviously. So I think Steve Garvey will be fine, but he's got to get a Republican Party, whatever's left of it, in California to rally around him. So far, they have not. What I also find interesting in California, and a lot, is that he has totally let the border break down. He's calling on Republicans to pass legislation he probably wouldn't adhere to, and his approval rating has dropped to 47%. So for the first time since he was almost recalled and kicked out, Gavin Newsom has dropped below 50%. And I think it's a lot of people looking around going, you're not keeping us safe. You're not dealing with the homeless problem. You did a terrible job in San Francisco. The border's an absolute mess. In San Diego, the actual cities have been totally changed by the influx of illegals where they don't even feel they can leave their kids out. And for those who think that's a stereotype on immigrants, it's not. I don't know who's coming in. Would you leave your kids out in the yard, let them walk back from school when you don't know the next 1,000 people might have 22 that are involved in gangs? The answer is absolutely not. You would absolutely not do that. But today is Super Tuesday, and today we're going to find out where 15 states are going to go. It's going to be great. We're going to find out where 870-plus delegates are going to go. We're also going to find out in places like Alaska. If they don't get over 50%, they'll split the delegates. Maine will do a proportional vote, too. So Nikki Haley could get some electoral votes, but will be enough for her to stay in the race. She says, I have to be in contention. I don't know. Is that contention? Usually candidates run out of money. She's not running out of any money. There's an anti-Trump feeling out there. There's also a bunch of Democrats who love the way Nikki Haley goes after Donald Trump. Hey, don't forget, you could always get our podcast, BrianKilmeadShow.com, where other platforms are. And you go to Fox News app, click on watch, and then swipe.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening to you. I come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. We're heard around the country, heard around the world. Daniel Lippman standing by, political reporter covering the White House and Washington. Always a great insider. And Larry Kudlow, heads or tails of the economy. Do we really blame the grocery stores owners for the high prices? That's what President Biden says. Don't blame him. Inflation's down. It's those greedy people that own King Cullen and Food Town and Stop and Shop. Can you believe it? Or Gristiti's. I'm pretty sure in small businesses like that, they pretty much understand their customers, and they won't be gouging them. They are not the problem, Mr. President. Take some responsibility for yourself. Hamas, by the way, is coming out saying that the ceasefire talks between the IDF and Hamas are ongoing. They have not broken off, and we'll bring you the latest on that. Also, Michelle Obama came out earlier and made it clear, you know, unequivocally, she will not run for president, which is kind of nice, being that supposedly friends with the Bidens. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Issue number one, two, and three is absolutely the border. Folks were telling me, you know, they're tired. We're exhausted. We're done with all of the chaos. We're done with Biden not doing anything.
Yeah, and that is Tony Gonzalez, who knows the border. He's a congressman in Uvalde area. Two legal setbacks for the broken border bills. State movements in Arizona and Texas stopped by the courts in Texas's case, at least for now, and stopped by the Democratic governor in Arizona's case.
Number two.
I am working with a number of my colleagues to revive legislation that we had to set up a process by which we could determine that someone who committed insurrection is disqualified by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment.
Sickening, right? Jamie Raskin, by the way, a note to you. No one's been charged with insurrection. No one's been indicted on insurrection. No one's been convicted on insurrection. That's why 9-0 the Supreme Court said he can fight, he can compete, he should stay on the ballot. I have an idea, Democrats. Why don't you just try to get more votes than him?
Number one.
I won in South Carolina against her. So look, there's no path for Nikki. I wish Nikki the best. But she stood up and many, many times said, I'd never run against our president. You know, those things you don't like to see.
We lost in 2018. We lost in 2020. We lost in 2022. We can want to change the country all day long. But if we can't win an election, we can't do any of that.
Well, that is Nikki Haley today saying Super Tuesday will be super for her. She's got to square off with the president, the former president, and she's supposed to come up with something. Word is, got a good shot at getting some delegates out of Alaska, possibly Maine. Daniel Lipman joins us now, political reporter and political insider. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Good to be back.
First off, are you surprised that Nikki Haley is still fighting on and won't commit to dropping out if she gets trounced today?
I'm not that surprised, since she has wanted to run for president since she was governor of South Carolina, and she sees that this is her chance, even if she's actually not going to be president. But she is hoping that if Trump gets convicted of a crime in the next few months, that people at the convention will want to throw him overboard and say, hey, let's go to Nikki Haley, who there's polls that say that she would have a better chance of beating Joe Biden, although some of the MAGA base would be so mad that they got rid of Trump that they would stay home.
Yeah, that's the problem. Has she ran since DeSantis dropped out? She seems to be running more like Chris Christie than the way she started. Here's what she said to that question. Cut 45.
I pledged that I would support the nominee when I was on the debate stage. But what I want to do, I get to do what I want to do, Ainsley. Right. I don't have to. If he refused to sign the pledge, I don't have to go forward. But I'll make that decision on my own. This is something where I'm focused on an election. When you're in the middle of a fight, you don't think about what you're going to do if you lose. You think about how you're going to fix things when you win. Right. And that's what I'm doing. And so as much as everybody wants to go and push me out, I'm not ready to get out yet.
And that's why. And she says, as long as I'm in contention, Daniel Lipman, what does in contention, you think, look like? Does this remind you of any other cycle?
Well, it's hard to say that she's really still in contention if she's only won one primary so far and is likely to only win one or two, if that, today. She won the D.C. primary, which has only 2,000 people who voted. She got 1,200 of those votes over the weekend. And many of them are lobbyists and government insiders who are kind of the status quo establishment Republicans. But this is a much different Republican Party, and so much more working class. And that doesn't really she can't really appeal to those people because they love Donald Trump still.
So over the weekend, we watched three major polls come out, the Fox poll, Wall Street Journal, CBS. Maybe it's four. Wall Street Journal, CBS, as well as the New York Times Siena poll. Trump up by four, New York Times. Trump up by two with Fox News, Wall Street Journal. Up by four with CBS. What's going on in the Biden camp when they see this? Too early, not worried, or what are they really thinking?
Well, what they are hoping for is that once they dump hundreds of millions of dollars of campaign ads against Trump in the next few months, then those numbers are going to get hurt for him. And they also hope that the longer Nikki Haley stays in the race, then the percentage of Republican voters who say they won't support Trump potentially will grow. And so that's right now that number is around 1 in 7 Republican voters, not enough to win yet. And they're also hoping that the Gaza war ends and that people give credit to Biden for a booming economy, even if some people still can't feel it at the grocery store.
So if you look inside those poll numbers, only 18% of the country think President Biden's policies have helped them, benefited their family personally. His policies have not helped. That includes 19% of whites, 16% of blacks, and 15% of Hispanics. For Trump, 44% of those polled thought that his policies have benefited personally are white, 26% were black, 37% were Hispanic, and 41% were males. So he's moving up everywhere. In fact, if you'd believe the polls, that with the black vote, he's now around 20%. If that happens, it's almost game over, Dan.
Yeah, black voters, particularly black women voters, are at the core of the Democratic Party. And so if you see significant defections of those of that group, then it's going to be really tough for Biden. What's also interesting is Hispanics. Trump is winning Hispanics right now, which is pretty wild given how tough he was on the border during the last administration. When he announced he was calling migrants coming in rapists and murderers. But there's a significant share of Hispanics who they came in legally and they don't want people to cut the line, and they did everything right. And so they do not like the millions, several million people who have come across the border illegally and blame Biden for it. And so that's what Biden will really have to address this at the State of the Union tomorrow.
On Thursday. 6 in 10 U.S. adults doubt that Biden has the mental capacity to do the job. And 57%, by the way, say that Trump lacks that, too. So this is at a point now where I saw David Axelrod was quoted in The New Yorker magazine saying that with Biden's record, and if he was 20 years younger, he'd be in really good shape. But he's not. And he's not in really good shape. Barack Obama could, and Bill Clinton could be trailing, George Bush for the most part, could be trailing. They'll say, okay, I'll go out work you. I'm going to get some big crowds, get some rallies, go behind the scenes, shake some hands, raise some money, and I'll turn this thing around. I don't know anybody that thinks that Joe Biden's got that energy and charisma and ability and to do that. Do you?
It's looking bleak. And also, remember, he was having those big rallies earlier in the year, and then they kept getting disrupted by pro-Palestinian protesters.
Yep.
Because a lot of liberals are very mad at how strongly pro-Israel Biden has been during this conflict, and so they purposely are starting to have smaller rallies, and then they keep the location away from the media and the public. But that has the perverse result of not reaching the millions of people, the tens of thousands of people that he has to talk to if he's not doing big events on college campuses and trying to get out the vote. That is, he'll have to reverse that strategy if he wants to win.
I mean, very interesting, because I asked Trump today, the president's getting heat for his pro-Israel stance. You're even more pro-Israel. He says, well, yeah, they got to finish the job. And he kind of feels though he's about to abandon Israel. One person who is not pro-Israel overwhelmingly is the squad. Anyone on the squad, just to show you how crazy things are getting in New York, Daniel Lippman, by the way, we're talking to Politico. Here's Congresswoman AOC trying to go to the movies with her fiance. Listen to this, cut 40.
You refuse to call it a genocide. It's not okay that there's a genocide happening. You're not actively against it.
You're lying. Do you have any comments?
You're going to cut it, and you're going to cut this, and you're going to clip this so that it's completely out of context. I already said that it was, and y'all are just going to pretend that it wasn't over and over again. It's f***ed up, man. If you're not helping these people,
TV.
And you're not helping them.
It's getting really out of hand with the protesters. I mean, they're stopping cops from doing their job, harassing left-wing Democrat squad members. And this is pretty surreal, isn't it?
I watched that clip last night, and I was floored. It reminded me, remember, protesting public officials goes back, I think, a long time in our history of our great country. But I remember when it was happening during the Trump administration, you had people at restaurants, they couldn't eat. You remember the kids in cage, kids getting separated from their families. That led to a huge amount of protests against Trump officials. And you also have a pretty smart strategy by Trump that they're previewing, which is to air ads in Michigan thanking Biden for being so pro-Israel during the general election, and in the hopes that will tamp down Arab American support for Biden. So that's pretty. I tip my hat off to the Trump campaign, just as a student of this stuff. I don't take a side, you know, Brian. But just that is pretty brilliant stuff.
I give them some credit there. So on Thursday, with the State of the Union address, knowing that in most polls, immigration, illegal immigration, the broken border, and even President Biden going there the same day as Trump as an acknowledgement, what do you think he puts in that? Being that he's got everybody around him who understands the urgency, they all saw the polls. What does he put in that State of the Union address that could be lasting and make an impact?
I think he's going to carry out some of those executive actions that Republicans and Trump have been urging him to do, to clamp down on the asylum laws, where we have such a totally broken asylum system where people can come in, they get a court date in a few years, and even if they lose at that court date, then they often stay in the country. And so he is going to do whatever he can with the presidential pen and see if that will take down the numbers, act as a deterrent for people to cross the border. But it's very possible that people might still come across because they want to get a better – most of these people want to get a better life for themselves, and they're willing to hike through thousands of miles, hundreds of miles. But I think he really has to kind of tell the American people that he gets this and that it's an important issue, and hope that he can totally nail the State of the Union where he doesn't have any gaffes, that he can assure the tens of millions of Americans watching that he is with it and that he could do the job for the next 4 years.
Right. I mean, on Friday, reading from cards when he said we're dropping humanitarian aid in Ukraine twice. I mean, even Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation on Sunday was incredulous when she brought that up to Ro Khanna, her surrogate. And then if the president wants to say, well, I want to crack down the border, it's migration, climate change. But Congress won't do anything. When 60 Minutes did their feature, which I thought only told a small portion of the border story, the interview with Raul Ortiz, who was running the Border Patrol, I think was a moment that I think people should take in when they decide who's tougher on the border. Listen to this.
I've never had one conversation with the president or the vice president for that matter. And so I was the chief of the Border Patrol. I commanded 21,000 people. That's a problem.
And don't you agree that's a problem for somebody who wants to say they're tough on the border and it's just a broken system?
That was kind of wild to see, because you would expect that he would be in meetings with the
yes.
president. I'm sure he was at the National Security Council sometimes for those meetings. But a lot of this is delegated to the DHS Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas. And he came in as a pretty tough guy on the border. This was not welcomed by a lot of those progressive immigration groups. But they're really having to kind of backpedal and try to figure out how to tamp down these numbers, but also, try to show that they can provide some leadership on this. But having that out there does not help, because it makes them look like they were not taking this seriously. But what they're going to do is blame Republicans and say, Congress, you had a total border security bill, no legalization, none of that, just border security, and you refused to pass that because Trump said he wanted to keep that as a issue in the political system.
And finally, is the government going to shut down? Do you think Speaker Johnson understands that that would not work for him? And are they working on anything with the Brian Fitzpatrick bipartisan problem solver legislation that would have them change the rules at the border, have a Remain in Mexico policy, and fund Ukraine?
I think we're not going to see a government shutdown, because Speaker Johnson's a smart guy. He recognizes that if you look at the polls, Republicans usually lose standing politically when the government shuts down. And so they're going to work it out. We'll probably get Ukraine aid sometime in the next few weeks, not as much as Democrats and McConnell want, but enough to keep them in the fight against Russia.
All right. Daniel Lipman, Politico, thanks so much, Daniel. It was great. It's an exciting time.
Thank you.
Look forward to your analysis. Appreciate it. 1-866-408-7669. I'll take some calls when we come back. And then at the bottom of the hour, Larry Kudlow will make sense of the economy, maybe balance your checkbook. Don't move.
On the road to 2024. Is a Trump nomination just a Super Tuesday away?
Well, the numbers are far greater than we even anticipated.
I hope she'll drop out.
There's no reason for her to stay in.
You can't win a general election if you can't get 40% of Republican primary voters.
All eyes on Super Tuesday, right here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's a lie. She knows it's a lie. Look, I have beaten Biden in every poll taken for the last 3 months. She loses to Biden in the poll. She had one fake poll that was taken a long time ago, actually before she started on her little kick, and where she was up, nobody ever heard of the poll. Nikki Haley loses to Biden. She will lose to Biden. The polls are saying that. And then when you add other candidates, she loses by even more. We are winning against Biden in every single poll, and everybody knows it.
That was the president on Fox and Friends earlier with me and Lawrence. A couple of things important to point out. Haley does do good against Joe Biden, a little bit better than the former president every time head-to-head. One of the reasons is she's a little bit more attractive to the non-Trump fans, so she gets them in. But she hasn't been attacked. For the most part, Dems have totally laid off her. They have no interest in her background, no interest in saying anything negative about it. So all the negativity, 97% of all the press is negative towards, drum roll please, Donald Trump. And Joe Biden gets his fair criticism because of his performance. But no one really touches Nikki Haley. And that will change and that will bring down the earth. The other argument that she has that no longer works in saying that Donald Trump can't win. There's nobody who thinks he can't win. You might not think he will win, but there's no one who says he can't win. So that dog doesn't hunt. We'll see what happens tonight on Super Tuesday. Keep it here. We want to find out about the economy, the president's next goals, and more. Larry Kudlow is next. Cannot wait.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Definitely climate.
Stop wars.
No fascism.
Roe v. Wade is huge for sure.
I'm just looking for stability, trying to keep things operating and functioning.
Right now it would be the border, get that under control.
Our national security, our border is an issue, and then just making sure we have a healthy economy and that our country is on a good track for the future.
So that's just a little about what people are thinking now as they get set for Super Tuesday. If they're one of the 15 states or the few more that are left around the corner for Donald Trump to lock up and then lock up the nomination. Larry Kudlow, former White House economics advisor, host of Kudlow on FBN, 4 o'clock. You hear him and see him every day. Larry, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me back.
No problem. I know you're getting set to host your show today. But quick look at what's bothering the country, what issues matter. They're pretty much right in the ballpark of what Donald Trump focused on with you alongside him.
Yeah, you know, inflation, economy, falling wages, affordability crisis, and, of course, the whole border catastrophe, which, you know, dovetails not only into the illegals, but the crime wave that is part of the illegal story and the drug wave and so forth. It's Donald Trump's wheelhouse. There's no question about it. And I was just thinking, you know, the Super Tuesday, obviously the outcome is not in doubt. Trump's going to sweep. But I have a sense, and I'm not a brilliant political guy, but I think you're going to get a pretty strong Trumpian turnout. As we've seen in these other states in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and so forth, Michigan, good turnout. because people want to go and make – they're making a statement. I don't know if you saw my pal Rich Lowry's column today in the New York Post, the editor of the National Review. We had him on the show last night. He calls it Trump nostalgia. People yearn for better times that happened under Trump. And I think they want to get out there today and make that statement.
I think it's so interesting because on one hand, you have Rich Lowry writing that column, and then the New York Times have this. Do Americans have a collective amnesia about Donald Trump? It's been 3 years, but memories of Mr. Trump's presidency have faded and changed fast. And they cite one of their things that 4 million Americans eligible to vote at 18 were in middle school 4 years ago. They might not realize basically how bad it was. And that's isn't that a fascinating take?
Wait, you mean how bad Trump was? Is that
yeah.
what you're saying?
I'm like, what is that? Instead of just people saying, well, look at what there's look what the American people are concluding. They say, look at why America has just had short term memory loss.
Well, it's a good point. I confess I didn't see the article, but the New York Times own poll says something much different. OK. And shows how Trump is way ahead on every single key issue. And he does win the horse race by 4 or 5 percentage points. I mean, you know, polls aren't votes. I always say that. But I think right now Trump is in very good shape. You know, probably be honest with you. Trump's in better shape now than I would have ever thought if you and I had this conversation 1 year ago. He's in better shape. Now, part of this is Biden's breakdown. Biden's done a terrible job. All of his woke, all of his open borders, all of his mistakes on the economy, all of his mistakes on foreign policy, and, of course, his own cognitive shortcomings. But part of it is, you know, people took they've taken a pay cut, Brian. It's the simplest way I can put it. Wages after inflation, after price hikes, have fallen nearly 5% average real weekly earnings. I did the math again this morning just to check because I was on with Bill Hemmer and Dana. And they've fallen by nearly 5%. During the Trump years, your average pay, middle class, working stiff, increased by close to 7%. And I just think that that is fundamental to this election at this stage of the game and shows why there's so much support for Trump among working folks, right? And you see these polls, including the New York Times, inroads that Trump is making, of course, the white working class, but also the Hispanic, Latino, the African-American. And the other one that's so interesting, Brian, in that Times poll, women, by 20 percentage points, women said that they were more likely to have benefited from a Trump presidency than a Biden. This is women.
I know.
The so-called gender gap. That just blew my socks off.
So a couple of things. If I just said to you, Larry Kudlow, I'm, let's say we have a paper due, and I gave you these numbers, unemployment would be low, inflation be on the way down, the GDP would be solid, I think 2.5, I think they're expecting this month. You'd be like, okay, those are good numbers, but people aren't feeling it. In every poll, you don't get people saying the economy feels good or going in the right direction. And once again, this administration has to have a bad guy, and they're picking grocery store owners. Well, the inflation's going down, but these greedy grocery store owners are the ones keeping prices up. They want to maximize profit. Isn't that an interesting where to put your ire?
Yeah, I'm reading about the shrinkflation stuff. And, of course, you know, all the progressives in Biden's administration, they don't like business. Okay, they're all anti-business. Biden himself loves to lash out and blame business for everything. And wants to raise taxes on business. But the reality is, again, the wholesale prices that go into these things, you know, cookies and stuff like that, hamburgers. There's one here on a $16 cheeseburger. What goes into it? I'm just looking. A friend of mine, DJ Norquist, sent me this. Eggs are up almost 300%. Onions are up 188%. Italian dressing, Brian, is up 170%. Mustard packets are up 132%. Swiss cheese is up 123%. French fries are up 86%. Rich Lowry told me he had two bags of fries and a milkshake at McDonald's, cost him $17. So look, these companies, you know, their input costs, their wholesale costs, and by the way, their labor costs. And by the way, all these big blue states are jacking up minimum wages, which adds into it.
Yep.
So what are they going to do? Either they raise their prices enormously, which turns off consumers, or they do a little shrinking for the content. I mean, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And I think Biden going after that, it just sounds goofy. Mm. That's what it's just goofy. It's not serious policy making.
So the thing is, and I made this statement earlier, that President Obama, if he was trailing with these type of numbers around 40% approval rating, he could do five events a day, do a bunch of fundraisers. And then the same thing with Bill Clinton. Nobody doubted his energy. George W. Bush, charming, especially one on one, you know, and he would close the gap. It does. I don't think it's possible for Joe Biden to do that. Here's Hillary Clinton, of all people, on how she plans to help. Listen to her messaging. Tell me if you think this will work. Cut 10.
This is not someone who we want to give power to again. So I think that's what this election's really going to be about. And, you know, somebody the other day said to me, Zerlina, well, but, you know, Joe Biden's old. I said, you know what? Joe Biden is old. Let's go ahead and accept the reality. Joe Biden is old. So we have a contest between one candidate who's old, but who's done an effective job and doesn't threaten our democracy. And we have another candidate who is old, barely makes sense when he talks, is dangerous and threatens our democracy.
So what are your thoughts? Is that helping?
You know, I don't think it's helping. I mean, she's pointing out Biden's frailty. You know, Trump was on one of the Washington, D.C. radio shows. And he made a good point. It isn't just age, Brian. It's not just age. I mean, Trump is 77, but he is so energetic and very coherent. There's something else wrong with President Biden, okay?
I agree.
We don't know what it is. They're certainly not going to tell us. But you know there's – it's not – look, I know 80-year-olds. I know 85-year-olds. You know my friend Wilbur Ross. You know,
sure.
Wilbur Ross, a brilliant businessman, commerce secretary. He and Hillary are among our dearest personal friends. The guy's 85 years old, is sharp as a tack, Brian. I talk to him all the time, sharp as a tack. He's running a SPAC. He's about to buy a Spanish financial company. I'm an independent board member. I mean, the guy's – it's not age. There's something else wrong with Joe Biden, and I think people realize that, and I don't think Mrs. Clinton should be pointing all that out. But I wanted to add, you know, Donald Trump will do seven events a day. I mean, that's his history. He'll do whatever it takes. And the guys, you know, it's so fascinating, and I've spoken to him about this. He wants to go into places that we, you know, Republicans haven't won in years. He was talking today, I think it was on Fox and Friends, maybe, but he's talking today. When you interviewed him this morning, was it then when he said, we're going into Virginia, we're going to try to win Virginia back? He wants to have a rally in Madison Square Garden and another rally in the South Bronx. I mean, he's going to shake everything up. He's very energetic. I mean, how did he look to you this morning?
He was on the phone. He sounds fine. I mean, I watched all his stuff to get ready for the interview. And, you know, what happens is people point out that he might screw up Obama and Biden. But that's at the 45 minutes. He might flip a phrase. I hate to tell you, but no one says I'm too old, thankfully. And I'm flipping words, too, and sometimes forgetting names. So now they're trying to find something similar to Joe Biden, but they're not finding it. And that's the issue. And I think when you need cards that you look at and still say the word, the wrong word, Ukraine instead of Gaza, I think that is an issue. And I think when you have to have cards for a fundraiser, that's an issue.
You know, listen, I've done like you. I've done TV a long time. We're both still doing it. Sure, I'm going to miss one. I might forget a last name or a first name every now and then. Nobody's perfect. The card thing, well, I don't know. I'm not necessarily opposed to cards. These guys have a lot of things on their minds. I used to write up cards for President Trump, although a lot of times when he was doing stuff, he wouldn't use the cards, but he liked to read them and then put them in his pocket just in case. Ronald Reagan used cards many years ago. Jimmy Baker would staff it out for us. But he'd get up there and say whatever it is he wanted to say. I just think that there's too much about this. I think to go back to the issues, the border is broken. There's way too much lawlessness. What happened to that poor woman in Georgia? These are things that are just killing it right now. The country is not in good shape. Nobody's making the case that the country is in good shape. And nobody's making the case that people are satisfied or happy or contented. I think this is a declining period. And I think people don't want decline. And I think they're going to seek a replacement in Washington, clean up the stables, clean up the swamp. I just think it plays into President Trump's wheelhouse. We'll see. I know there's 8 months left and a lot could happen and so forth. But I really think at this point, advantage Trump.
So, Larry, I'm sure you've seen the stories and I'm sure you know it, that China's struggling. Those ghost cities are not filled up. Now they're rotting cities. I watched the 60 Minutes feature 3 weeks ago. It backs up everything I've been reading the Wall Street Journal and talking to people. They are not doing well. And the next generation does not have a work ethic. They're doing their own quiet quitting. They're going into faraway locations. They're staying out of the workforce. They're now fining colleges if their people can't get money, but there's no place to go. Their real estate market's collapsing. This is an opportunity. Don't you see it?
Yes. Now, that's a very interesting point. I think the China economic slump, and incidentally, commercial real estate is probably at the heart of it. And at the heart of that, Brian, is the Chinese socialist system, because the government parcels out credit and loans to the companies they pick, which are attached to the Chinese Communist Party. And that's a very inefficient way. I mean, the socialist system does not work. So you're right. And they're in a huge slump. There's no reason to believe they're going to come out of this slump. So therefore, this is a time to be very tough on China, very strong on China. Where's China going to find the resources if they think they're going to fight wars like with Taiwan, for example? I mean, yet the administration should be much stronger in its dealings with China. Instead, we let China push us around. Listen, China is financing two wars against the United States by buying Russian oil and buying Iranian oil, okay? And that should be stopped, and sanctions should be implemented, and the fear of God should be put into Xi Jinping. But they don't do that. In these meetings, they just lay back. Biden does, or Blinken does, in a way that Trump would never do, or Pompeo would never do. And this is a time to be very aggressive and take this advantage. You are right. The Chinese economic slump, you see it, by the way, in falling commodity markets. Almost every commodity index is down 25-30%, and it's mostly because China's not growing. So we should use this to our advantage. But unfortunately, that's not the case.
Larry Kudlow, we're going to watch you today at 4. Is that okay with you?
I hope so. All right. You got to come back on our show yourself.
Absolutely. Right. Waiting for the invite, Larry. Thanks so much. 4 o'clock, FBN. Care, appreciate it. When we come back, I'll finish up with a flurry of your calls. Or you can write me at briankilmeade.com, right? And all you do is click on comments. It'll drop right down and it'll go to my email. Don't move.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Just a quick reminder, April 27th, just go to briankilmeade.com, and I want you to join me in Henderson, Nevada. I'm going to have a chance to talk about history, liberty, and laughs, and talk about everything going on at Fox around the world, and talk sports and everything. It's just been some of the most fun we have, and there are VIP tickets left. And that's a chance where I can go before the show, about 90 minutes before, and have a chance to talk to answer all your questions and give you a preview of the big night. So go to briankilmeade.com and get some tickets. Also, you have Teddy and Booker T, which is now out. And of all the other books will be there, including a chance to get one of my T-shirts that say Stay Within Yourself, which I think there are more people should do. Some people are writing me, so I want to get to some of them. Richard Lau writes this: Brian, if they were replacing weapons in Ukraine with new weapons, as Mark Thiessen says, why are our stockpiles so dangerously low? We need defense contractor here in Virginia. We have defense contractors here in Virginia, but they are way behind. 100%, Rich. Part of what I would be doing if I was president of the United States is saying what, Rich, you just told me to say. We have a problem with weapons production. We are going to put some money into expanding our weapons base. Here are the places that'll do it. Here are the companies that'll make it happen. At the same time, get them the Javelins. Get them the Abrams tanks. Also, we have, you heard Kellogg, General Kellogg yesterday. We have thousands of tanks in Germany. We got Abrams tanks in Germany. They're there, Bradley people movers. They're there in Germany. There are a lot we can put into action right away, but expanding the base would be part of my agenda to get me four more years. Thank you for that.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.